You're listening to SpectraCast, the show where I get behind the scenes on diversity and inclusion. I'll be talking to a number of people who have taken steps towards greater inclusion of others, and also with those who have benefited from being included in the workplace. Whilst my bias might be towards recruiting and retaining neurodiverse people, I'll also explore practical approaches to being more inclusive overall. Hi, I'm your host Chris Turner, and I've made it my mission to help employers to embrace and reap the rewards of being more inclusive of neurodiversity. In doing so, I hope to do my little part in ensuring more neurodiverse people get the same opportunities and choices as everyone else when it comes to work and employment. So, if you're curious and want to learn from those who are doing it, and you favour action over inaction, then stick around.
Welcome to the podcast, guys. Really glad to have you here for the episode. Today I'm speaking to Jay Hobbs, a psychologist and a director at Thriving Now, based in Brisbane, Australia. And Jay's got some really interesting insights and perspectives based on his many, many years of working with autistic people and their families and supporting them into employment. So we had started talking before I hit record, so we'll just jump straight into it and we'll pick up where we were at.
Really, we could talk about this, but the difference that I've discovered is really important is just understanding each individual. And yes, somebody on the spectrum, but are there other challenges that they're currently facing?
Yeah.
As a psychologist, I look at things like dyslexia, things like ADHD, very often co-occurring.
Yes.
And really important as to how you're going to support the individual to be a great employee. Mm. So I think that's such an important part of it. But I also think just looking holistically, Chris, so I've been working with somebody over in Perth. And yep. One of the major barriers for them is where they live to find mm-hmm. employment. So it's really, it's focusing in on the challenges and the strengths of their autism or Asperger's syndrome, whatever it is, but it's looking more broadly at the whole picture for that person.
Yep.
And then I suppose if it's a program or a recruitment process that a company is doing, then that's a great opportunity because it's likely that there are some other employees that are going through the same thing. And so if you mm-hmm. can solve it for that individual, it's going to really help the wider workforce.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting you say that because that's one of the conversations. Well, it's actually probably a critical conversation that I try to have with any employer is around how do we revisit or relook at the actual recruitment process to address that front door rather than trying to create something that sort of works completely outside of that process and brings people in on the side. Is how do we bring one person in through the front like very very deliberately. And test how do we tweak that front door process so that you can actually make it a lot more accessible for everyone else. Because, as you say, depending on the organisation, it's 10-1 they've had some or possibly quite a lot of people who would fit that profile who have applied and some of them may have made it through. And I know there are plenty of places where they do. But, yeah, there's going to be a lot that don't. With a few simple tweaks and a bit of understanding, I think, you can open yourself up to a good pool of talent.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's one of the things that's not well understood. There are lots of jobs going begging in Australia mm-hmm. in a range of industries. Agriculture in the farming industry was one project that I worked on, autism and agriculture. There's IT jobs. And so there really is a need for staff.
Absolutely.
To answer your question about what can be tweaked about the current process, my experience is just simply changing the process and getting people to demonstrate the skills that an employer wants to see. So on the farm, It's, you know, can they move the cattle? Can they move the pigs? Can they do what's necessary in that role? And giving them a chance to show that.
Yep.
And then, of course, then depending on the level of the staff, it's training them to do that. And the thing with people on the spectrum is that will take out the communication need, the need to communicate strengths, and people judging that applicant based on their communication, because someone on the spectrum is not necessarily going to do great with that.
In the interview setting.
Yeah. And on the flip side, and this is important for any business, somebody who's really good at communicating may do very well in the interview, but can they do the job?
Yeah, that's it. Right.
If they're very good at communicating, perhaps a bit like me, who can do very well in interviews, but it doesn't mean I can necessarily do the engineering job, do the farming job that I'm supposed to be doing. And so if you're looking at the skill set, giving people an opportunity to demonstrate that, I think it's a more accurate way to get good employees, and it takes the barriers away for many.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's finding ways to remove the necessity to sort of self-advocate and pitch and sell yourself in that interview, because it doesn't work. And for a whole range of people, not just neurodiverse people as well, there's a whole range of people who just don't sell themselves well, maybe get very nervous in an interview, but in a less structured conversational type of environment, could be a lot more relaxed. And that's kind of one of the things that I tell people is that if you're going to do an interview, don't do what you would normally do with your interview. Don't sit in a room across the table. Go and grab a coffee. Go for a walk. Sit in a park and just have a chat. And you can be clever about the questions you ask and how you guide the conversation to uncover the sorts of things you want to get to. But make it very sociable. Make it conversational and a lot less confrontational. And you're going to put that person at a lot more ease, and they're going to open up far more than they would in an interview room.
That's a good point, Chris. And even getting some questions in advance, it's a really good practice.
Oh, yep. No, absolutely. We're trying to do that as much as we can too.
But I'm a radical. I don't think interviews work particularly well. I want to get rid of them. And so when we worked at Specialist, and that's what we did. Not everybody can do that in their process. But like you say, how can you change it so that it's helping me to understand the skills this person has? And I'm a radical about CVs too. Listing a range of things that you've done when you're just starting out in your career, it doesn't really work. So much more appropriate is asking people to answer questions about the specific thing that they needed. So again, in the Autism and Agriculture program, we didn't use CVs. We said, look, we're looking for somebody who loves animals, who loves farming. Send us some photos or tell us about what it is that you love about animals. And that was brilliant. The people came out and discussed their pets, their experiences growing up on farms, etc. And they were the people that we needed in that program. So, yeah, I think a lot can be changed. But for any small business, for me what it is giving some people, some neurodiverse people, a chance. Understanding a bit about neurodiversity.
Yes.
And then, you know, giving some people a chance. There are plenty of employment service providers. Epic is a fantastic Australia-wide Epic Assist. And organisations can really be guided by someone like Epic to interview or assess somebody. And also after the person's placed, provide some level of support there. But I would just say, you know, dip your toe in the water, look at what skills you're needing in your organisation and go and find them. And I'm sure that people who are neurodiverse will be able to accommodate those skills.
Yeah, I think there's probably very few things that you wouldn't be able to find if you really wanted to. A neurodiverse person to do. And so I think there's a few cliches or misconceptions around, especially when it comes to autism. Yeah, well, autistic people can't do X, Y, and Z. They couldn't be good at sales or that sort of a face-to-face customer-based role. Yeah, actually, there's going to be some people who are going to be bloody awesome at doing that. And I've spoken to a few people like they go, well, you would never know, right?
That's right.
and they're fantastic conversationalists. They might be completely disorganized, or they might go home and just crash on the couch and that's it for them for the day. But in terms of their ability to do that job, yeah, great. But yeah, I think as you say, like you really do need to understand the whole person and look at what's happening for them outside of just that work context, because there's going to be elements that may need to be supported around that or understood.
That's right. And organisation's a good one. It's really interesting that you mentioned that. People with ADHD, it's one of the most important things that that support's required around. Time management, prioritising, getting started, those sorts of things. And again, people who have a diagnosis of ADHD can be wonderful employees, but they are going to need some support in those areas. And guess what? So are some other employees in the business, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And so it's great that we have these examples of, you know, IT professionals who are on the spectrum, and yet people have these skills. But my desire is to have more and more and more of these sort of cliches, so that all of a sudden you just look at the person and say, right, what are the skills this individual's got?
Yeah, that's right.
So we went to farming specialist, and we went to farming, and so really a care for animals. A lot of people on the spectrum, a lot of neurodiverse people have a real affinity with animals, and yes, also a desire to work outside, not in an office. Many mm-hmm. people with ADHD, not all, really like an active role.
Yes. Yep.
Not necessarily outside work, but something where they can not just be sat the whole day long.
Yeah, it involves a bit of movement, right?
Yeah. Also, records management. A great program down in Victoria for the government down there. And it was really recording documents and uploading them on a system. And there's a group of ASPEs doing that for the government down there. Mm-hmm. So there's a range of jobs. Can you think of any, Chris? Any other that are really well suited?
I think there are some stereotypical ones around the whole software testing and programming and sort of that IT space, but I've come across people around like mechanical and engineering type roles.
Mm-hmm.
Know that there's plenty in accounting and legal.
Yes,
because it's about especially with the autistic people, it's that having a focused attention on developing and gaining knowledge. And if that person has a particular interest around legal matters or accounting sort of stuff, you know, they're going to get right into it. They'll really know their stuff really well. And in those sort of professions, having a really solid understanding of their professional knowledge base is highly valuable.
And so, the same, it's the same in medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. It wouldn't surprise me.
People with a real strong interest in a specific area of medicine, highly skilled, capable people. But yeah, a lot of people on the spectrum in medicine. Policing is another one.
Yes, go.
Yeah, so, following the rules, so a whole range of reasons. I think policing is a great career for somebody on the spectrum.
It surprised me, but when I spoke to someone about that, there's a guy I actually had on the podcast as well, I mentioned to you before, and it was kind of surprising initially, and then when you think about it, actually not really that surprising at all. But I think it's not really having a deep understanding of what's a day in the life of some of the policing roles looks like. But yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
It does. And then the other one, which I'm really keen for people to understand, is the creativity.
Yes.
And that, you often get that when there is, some autism, but also some other condition, co-occurring condition,
mm-hmm.
Like ADHD or dyslexia, where it changes the brain and so it doesn't follow so much of a very logical thought process, but more of a creative process.
Yeah.
And with some of the sensory sensitivities, that heightens the experience for many. So there's the obvious artists, like in the UK, Stephen Wilkshire, but he's a very sort of almost that mathematical sort of engineering type brain. But yeah. then you have Tim Sharp in Australia, bursting with colour and character, his art, and lots of other professions as well, music, etc. So that creativity, I think, can be very strong in many people on the spectrum. Again, not all, of course.
No, and you think, so what would you take it out of the artistic arena, but that that creativity and that out-of-the-box sort of non-linear thinking, when you come into solving business problems in a sort of business environment, there's a ton of value in having someone in the room who's going to come at that from a completely different angle and see things that other people won't see. And I think then the challenge then is, how do you integrate them from a communication and social integration perspective so you actually get the value out of them and people can work with them in a way that allows them to be their best but allows everyone else as well. So, yeah. So
you're absolutely right. I've worked with some consultants on the spectrum but also with other co-occurring conditions. And, yes, that honesty, that looking at things differently, coming into an organisation and analysing the issue and just giving solutions that others haven't thought of.
Yeah.
So,
it's
different things.
No, that's right. So I think you know, in terms of career paths, there's a whole gamut of things that people could do, and I'd almost try to encourage people, like, don't try to box them up. Why would you box anybody else? You'd say, well, if there's a job that needs doing, then obviously there's a person that can do it. Otherwise, the job wouldn't exist, right? So
yeah.
And I think if a person's got a heartbeat, they can probably do the job. You've just got to find a way to help them get there.
Yeah. And neurodiverse people need a job as well. I mean, what I try to focus on is a career.
Absolutely.
And what's something that can be long lasting for you that you're passionate and interested about? And that's going to be the best thing. But sometimes it's a job at Subway that's required whilst you're going through uni, whilst you're setting up your house, whatever. And so that's reasonable too. I mean, on what you were saying there, Chris, I totally agree. There's really no job that an autistic person, a dyslexic or someone with ADHD can't do. I agree with that. But what I would say is a specific individual, once you can understand their profile, then it's these jobs would be probably better suited to your skills.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, it doesn't mean it's IT. It could mean, well, you're a very creative and caring person. It's the caring professions. It's nursing or social work or whatever that you're going to need to be getting into.
Yeah, that's right.
Really just understanding how that person's skills are going to fit into that type of role. And so, yeah, I would say not a group. I wouldn't sort of stereotype or typecast a group, but I would typecast an individual and say, look, this office job isn't going to be for you. You like variety, you like moving around. And so why don't you look at that type of role? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. But how is that different to anybody else you met off the street?
Aha, it's not. It's absolutely not. What I worry about when people say that, because you're absolutely right, it's no different. But probably a neurodiverse person, if a workplace is set up with systems which aren't working very well, they're likely to suffer from it. They're likely to discover that. Whereas other employees may be able to have the skills to compensate.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you find is it will be the neurodiverse person that will suffer the first.
Yeah.
And that's why when you're designing, if you're an employer or a government department, if you're trying to recruit people, have a look at your organisation and how do you communicate with your staff? What are the processes you use and how can you do it better? And so if you're doing it better for someone who's neurodiverse, it'll be better for all. But yeah, so I think sometimes people on the spectrum, for example, will suffer more from a bad interview process than somebody else. And so therefore there's some more support required. And in a way, Chris, it breaks my heart. So many people on the spectrum are underemployed because of these sorts of reasons. And so the skills have been got at university, for example, But once they've fallen out of a workplace, which was pretty supportive, they can people can find it very difficult to get back in.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that perhaps is, and the research on employment and unemployment and underemployment in Australia in this area would suggest that there's a higher proportion of people on the spectrum unemployed and underemployed than neurotypicals. So, yes, I totally agree. How's that any different? But I think sometimes the challenges associated with autism or Asperger's make it more difficult in some areas.
Yeah, that's right. So, I think it's the fundamentals of the individual, how you would deal with the individual, how you would evaluate them against a role, all those sorts of things are no different from a neurodiverse person to a neurotypical person. It's how you deal with the edges. So as you say, it's the little things that can happen within your recruitment process, or how you manage, how you communicate, having a little understanding of the nuances around behavior and attitude and that sort of thing is where it's going to fall apart. But it doesn't need to be. It's not the whole. I think it's some little bits around the fringe of how you deal with that person. Because what I think often happens with a lot of organisations is it's same with anybody, right? If you don't understand something, can be pretty daunting. It can be scary. It's that whole fear of the unknown. And I think often that perception gets inverted, that what I need to manage is everything in the middle, as opposed to a few little bits around the outside. And therefore, I can't do this. It's going to be too hard.
Yes.
And what would you say to organisations that are sort of in that headspace?
This is too hard?
Mm.
It's not too hard. And there's plenty of support out there to do it. I would suggest get some support to do it. I support organisations. You've got DXC, a massive big company in IT, who can support organisations. You've got Specialistern, and you've got Disability Employment Services in Australia who can help, and there are supports out there. I would say engage one of those people to help you. And I would also say plan the process. Plan it. Go through it and have a look at what you're doing, what you want. Find the people you want. The worst thing that can possibly happen is a charity job. In my opinion, where they just find some jobs for somebody to do, and therefore they're not really valued in the business or needed or even wanted. Now, I suppose for somebody who also has an intellectual disability, that's a bit different. But again, you still need to find them something where they're going to be able to achieve a role. So I would say get some help with it, plan it. But it's not too hard. Lots of organisations have done this. Microsoft is doing some great things in the US with not only people with Asperger syndrome, but dyslexia.
Yeah.
The UK government is hiring dyslexic people. Lots of people out there who are playing around in this space, and it's going to improve the organisation that's doing it. It's really reflecting on the processes that the organisation has. It's a great HR thing to implement, really looking at what the company's doing already and how it can be improved.
What are some of the sort of the key takeaways that you've sort of, I guess, at least anecdotally had come back from employers who have gone down this path? What are sort of been the things that have stood out for them?
Well, I'm so keen about positives because there's so many. So the loyalty of neurodiverse staff is, I think we can say now with the research, is probably greater than neurotypical staff.
Mm-hmm.
They value the role, and people on the spectrum go to work, not to socialise necessarily.
Yes.
So loyal employees is a great one. And I think when you really get to know some employees on the spectrum, I think it can really change some lives. Somebody in the organisation who's really honest about their difficulties, someone who discloses, for example, other people suddenly say, well, actually, I've been having a hard time. This has happened in my family, or I've had this happen to me. And so that honesty, I think, can be, can really touch lives quite deeply. That's, it's a real, it's a really fantastic thing to do for sort of the morale of your organization. And so, and also efficiency. I think neurodiverse people can be very efficient in getting the work done. One of the issues that has been, that has come up is what to do when there's nothing to do. And of course, that happens in all organizations, and many neurotypicals are very good at looking busy. It's a social skill. Yeah. How to look busy when you don't have anything to do. And actually, what's really required is for all staff, okay, if there's nothing to do, here's the list of things we want you to get onto, and here are the priorities. So even some of the downsides, you know, not being comfortable with not much to do, that can be a real strength for an organization to say, well, what do we want people to do? So there's training and other things that can be. But I would just say start, look at, partner with an organization to help you who knows about these challenges and the positives that come along with it, and make a start, and, you know, you won't regret it.
Yeah, definitely. So, Jay, I know you guys have got something coming up later this year up in Brisbane. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
I'd love to. Our Neurodiversity and Employment Conference.
Hmm.
So, yeah, my organisation's putting on a conference. It's on the 31st of May up in Brisbane. And it's really, we're going to hear about, specifically about employment, but there's a range of different things around employment. There's a number of people on the spectrum coming. We've got Jeanette Perkis coming up from Canberra to share her insights. We have the wonderful Barb Cook, who is neurodiverse, and she's going to share her insights on employment, but also Barb has been mentoring people on the spectrum through Thriving Now, through an online program that we've been running.
Yep.
She's going to share her insights about that. We have Tony Atwood and Michelle Garnett speaking. I'll be sharing my insights. So it's really exciting, actually.
Yeah, sounds good.
We also have some employment organisations, and can't say anything yet, but we're hoping that there's going to be some opportunities launched or shared with the group that come along. So check it out. Thrivingnow.net is the website, and we're really excited about it, Chris, and we're hoping that it's going to be educational, but also help people find opportunities.
Brilliant, brilliant. And just before we wrap up, Jay, if people wanted to reach out and learn more or work with you guys, what's the best place to do that? Is that your website?
Yes, it is. I think consultancy is a great way for me to work with organisations that want to make a start on this or just have a conversation about it. And my email address is on the website. They can contact me. There's also some online training for staff. It's a presentation by Tony Atwood and Michelle Garnett. Some online learning for, you know, what is autism and Asperger's syndrome in the workplace. That's a great way to start to learn to begin with. But yeah, go to the website and get in contact. We'd love to hear from you. And if you're somebody on the spectrum, have a look at the Work Readiness Program. We have just the program itself available online, but also you can purchase an hour as well with an ASPE mentor, Barb, and others we're working with at the moment. So that's a really good service as well, I think.
Okay, sounds really good, Jack. Thanks very much for making time today. And really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Chris. Thanks, mate.
Thanks for sticking around, guys. I really do hope you enjoyed the episode today. I'm going to ask one small favour, and one only. If you have enjoyed the podcast today, please like and subscribe. It really helps me get to a broader audience and for other people to hear these conversations. Thanks very much, and I do hope to see you back next time. Cheers.